Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
All right, record. Good to go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend. And today, fun chat, a new friend on the show, and a regular friend who's always on the show. I guess, maybe not always. You're frequent. You're frequent, though. So I think you've moved past the guest phase. You're more like when people come over to your house a couple times and you're like, all right, I'm going to stop getting the glass for you. Like, just get the glass for yourself and there's the water. I think you're kind of at that status right now, both you and Ryan.
You know where the food is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me give you a quick update on what's going on in my world. So, I did a series of podcasts, took Thanksgiving off, did some traveling with the family, and going to ramp up. This weekend coming up is going to try to, I think, take my kids out hunting again. I haven't decided if I'm going to try to haul them around in a backpack to do some whitetail hunting or if I'm going to go get in the goose blind. But we'll see. That's likely on the agenda for this weekend. I've got some free time, and my wife's occupied with some meetings, so be a good time to introduce them to the outdoors again. So
you taking Remy?
As you recall. Yep, I'm going to take Remy. I think I have one of those like kid packs, you know, the ones with the little backpacks where you put it in. And back when Colin was here, I took him out goose hunting. Uh-huh. And he wears the earmuffs with no problem. So I think we'll be good to go out to do something, to either go back out in the goose blind like we did and spend the afternoon there or try to go find some whitetail doe. But, yeah, we'll see. TBD. But let's see, outside of that, and just solidified some plans with AJ coming up in December. Well, I guess it is December. Coming up third week in December before Christmas. We're going to head back up to Wyoming to try and fill those Wyoming elk tags that we've been sitting on now for a month. If you remember, we briefly discussed it in our antelope episode where we talked about our elk adventures up there, but it was very, very brief. So looking to kind of solidify that and get some redemption after a rough elk season for me, several times out to no avail. But hopefully, fingers crossed, things are ever in my favor.
How much longer do you have?
Till the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Wyoming elk season for these particular tags ends December 31st. So maybe that 3-day stint and then possibly another, but we're kind of restricted on the land that we can. So it's a smaller zone that is, it's off forestry land and off national forest land only. So there's only a couple spots of state land, that we can hunt. So I think BLM maybe. But we were up there. Like, there's elk sign everywhere. It's just about catching the herd at the right time. We were also still kind of later or earlier in the year, and they hadn't come down from the National Forest yet with the snow. So hopefully the temps cool down, because today it was a brisk 70 degrees here in Denver. So
it was 70 here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's December 1st. Uh-huh. What nonsense is this? So... Lance, feel free to chime in at any moment in this conversation. All right. Yeah. We'll still introduce you, but if you got a comment or a thought, just throw it in there as you see fit. Yeah.
Well, first and foremost, if you're in flat land in Wyoming hunting elk, you need snow.
Yeah.
Period. You know.
Well, this part's pretty the land where we hunt, so part of it's flat, and then some of it butts right up to the national forest there, and so there is a little bit, but they have to come down off the hill basically to kind of do it. We found a bowl where they had been resting at, but we'd missed them by like a day and a half. I think one of the guys we were talking to said somebody had spooked them out of that area, and so then that was the resident herd, so they kind of bumped over to private land. But yeah, hoping for snow or something. I don't know. We'll see. We got 2 weeks.
You know, this has definitely been unusual. We haven't had snow except for the week that I was up elk hunting, mm-hmm. and then it dumped.
Yep.
And it made it miserable. You know.
Yeah, it's been a weird one. Well, so outside of that, I'm going to give you both we're going to introduce Lance here in just a minute, and we'll give Emily a chance to get her updates. But I just want to remind everybody, we've got our other podcast, Antler and Fin. So that's like our recipe podcast. So you can go on there and listen to some of our favorite recipes, literally ingredient by ingredient, line by line, and kind of press pause, press play, and work your way through that. And then, as always, we have the Facebook group. The Wild Fishing Game community over on Facebook. It's a great place to interact with all the Harvesting Nature crew, with those that like the podcast, the website, the books, all the things that we're doing. They all kind of hang out there and share photos and experiences and food and all that stuff. So it's a fun place to be. Those links will be in the show notes for the community page. But you can go to Facebook as well and search Wild Fishing Game community, I believe it is. And then, as always, we're still doing hats for reviews. So 5-star review with a written review, if you like the show that much, which I hope you do if you're still listening at this point. You can leave the review there. We'll read the review on air, call your name out, say hey, shoot us an email, pick out a hat, and we'll send it your way. Super easy. Helps bump us up in the ratings of the great podcast gods out there, and helps our podcast slide to the top, which is what we want. And I think that's all I got. So, Emily, I'll bounce over to you, and if you got any updates for us.
Well, we have a holiday antlerless hunt that we're doing for veterans coming up in December that Lance is actually going to come down for and help cook. So that's pretty awesome that he's on tonight, and we'll see him here in like 2 weeks' time. 17 days?
Yeah, it's coming up
and
quick.
And then other than that, that's going to be kind of the conclusion of our year. I think we're going to go out to Texas one more time after Christmas with some veterans, some guys that Ryan was in 1-5 with. And mm-hmm. I'm just going to kind of tag along for that. So that's just going to be kind of fun. But and then starts off 2022. And I haven't even thought about it yet, really.
Yeah, 2022. I mean, there's still, you know, there's still time for waterfowl and small game, and Colorado we have late season whitetail.
Yeah, I mean, we still have hunting obviously available here, and we have been doing no gun 21 on the way we hunt, and it's been no deer, no gun for Emily. I haven't killed nothing. No, so the deer have eluded me. I think they know my schedule.
So then it's going to be a two-gun 22.
Yes, there we go.
It's going to go out blazing. Nice. All right, well, Lance, welcome to the show. For those that have never, I think we've shared some of Lance's stuff on social media. He has Tagged Out Kitchen, but he's also a fellow Denverite. Is that what we call ourselves?
Sure. I've been here long enough. I consider myself a Denverite.
There you go. All right. Go ahead, Lance. Please introduce yourself.
So I'm Lance Lewis. I have Tagged Out Kitchen. Started Tagged Out Kitchen this year as kind of a way to kind of draw all my interests together as far as being in the hunting world and outdoors world. It's a place I can kind of let my mind go and do all of its own little wacky things with recipes and thoughts of hunting and blogs and, you know, just kind of put myself out there. Part of what I do with Tagged Out Kitchen is I offer Zoom courses, similar to what mm-hmm. you guys do with your recipe courses as well. So if you like what you see, feel free to reach out and ask me anything. I can generate a course around it.
Yeah. So. Pretty good resource, Lance. You got a pretty solid culinary background as an instructor and all that, helping out in some of the various wild game, I guess, like skills camps, I guess would be the easiest thing to summarize it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I think really what kind of piqued my interest into this whole thing is really kind of trying to change the perception of the face mm-hmm. of hunting and create a inclusive environment to make it a little less intimidating. You know, I think as a whole, your demographic has completely changed. I grew up with a dad that took me hunting and taught me hunting skills, and it was something I picked up at a very young age. And I think in order for the industry to continue, it's making these things inviting for people to come in as a first timer and not feel intimidation and have room to learn from somebody as well as room to ask questions as well.
Yeah.
So that in a nutshell, that I think that's kind of where my whole Tagged Out Kitchen endeavor is going.
It's cool.
So.
I like it. I've been, you know, when I got out here to Denver, you quickly introduced yourself and we had some beers and chatted and I was like, man, what an awesome concept. So definitely 100% supportive of it. So I encourage everybody to go check out Lance's profile on social media and his website too. So all that's, I think it's all under Tagged Out Kitchen, right? Under on Instagram and stuff.
And yeah, it's on Instagram and the website as well. I still haven't set up a Facebook yet, but that's coming soon.
No worries. Believe it or not, I think a lot of our listeners are actually very big into Instagram. So it's a good place. It's a good spot. Well, so overall, though, today in this whole topic sort of spawned from a conversation that myself, you, and Ryan – and Emily, I think you were on the chain, the text chain too.
Yep.
We were talking about. So really, we wanted to discuss age ethics. And people might be saying, why are we talking about age ethics? What the hell are age ethics? And where does that fit into hunting and eating wild game and fish, I guess? So I guess to tie it all together, we were talking about, you know, I was out with Colin. Colin shot a very young deer, which is cool because we were out there hunting deer with antlerless tags and we legally harvested that deer. So no negative anything came from it. We just kind of were having the conversation of like, I think Ryan brought it up of like, why do we as hunters target older animals, or why is hunting in general lean towards targeting older animals when we look at agricultural practices and a lot of food practices that lean towards eating younger animals? Like for an example would be like veal or lamb or gosh, my mind just went blank, like suckling pig, things like that. Like those more, there's a lot of stigma that comes with that. But then also too, you don't hear a lot about people being like, oh, you know, I like those old scruffy goats, or, you know, I like mutton versus lamb, or I like a good, you know, well-aged cow or bull to just throw into the, or rooster or anything like that. You know, you start thinking about those things and you just really, I don't know.
Well, you know, everybody's going to have their opinion, but I feel like domestic versus wildlife when it comes to herd management is comparing apples to steak. I mean, because, you know,
I think it's apples to oranges.
Oh, yeah. No. They're both still
apples to
steak. No, they're still both fruit.
Unless the food pyramid has changed.
Yeah, no, apples and oranges are still fruit. We're talking apples and steak. Mm. Herd management is completely different when it comes to wildlife versus domestic.
No, 100%.
Yeah, I don't think you can compare the two.
Well, so I guess my thought being, as we look at it, is palatability one. So looking at flavor, texture, and tenderness. I guess tenderness could rope in under texture, but what people lean towards. And as we go through this, we can break down each one, but I'm just like, that's kind of what stands out to me in my mind from a culinary standpoint.
Well, I think from a culinary standpoint, you should be able to make anything taste amazing, right?
Well, I do. That's fair.
Well, in all actuality, though, there are examples in the culinary world of older game or of eating older animals, right? With French mm-hmm. dishes, there's Coco Van, which was your old mm-hmm. yard rooster, right? You mentioned mutton. Western Kentucky, that's about what Western Kentucky has going for it, is a huge mm-hmm. mutton barbecue, you know? So again, I mean, so there are examples of it within agricultural
We grew up eating like rooster and dumplings. It's like you'd get, you know, a couple troublesome roosters and they quickly ended up in the pot.
No, 'cause totally, totally understandable. You know, I think from a flavor standpoint, anything you're going to braise or stew for a real long time, you want that tougher meat that's going to hold up to that long
mm-hmm. But how's it not still come back around to a management thing? Because if you have a domestic animal, you can manage your herd properly the way that you want it. When it comes to a wild herd, I mean, you can only do so much to make sure that there's a 50-50 ratio of females versus males. And, you know, you want to take like the older, more mature animals, or if you're looking at your property and you can kind of quasi see that, hey, I have a ton of does and not very many bucks, or I have a ton of bucks and not very many does. So then you have to go through and decide, like, not from a food standpoint, but from a management standpoint, hey, I need a 50-50 ratio, and not this old school way of thinking is like, the more, you know, the more does I let live, there's going to be more bucks because they're going to be breeding. They're going to have more male deer. Well, you know, it's a 50-50 ratio when it comes to having a child or reproducing. It may be a male, maybe a female when it comes to it. So, you know, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation has a thing out right now that says hunters in the know take a doe, because our ratio is so skewed in Oklahoma right now mm-hmm. that we have way too many antlerless deer, way too many does versus our bucks, our male deer, because that old school way of thinking, well, if I kill a doe, then I'm not going to have any big bucks. Well, that's not accurate. I mean, that's from a biology standpoint, with my biology background, that's inaccurate information. I'm probably going to tick some people off, but I mean, it's facts are facts.
Well, I think that's really interesting, because growing up in Oklahoma, it was still that traditional, like, don't do mm-hmm. it. Like, don't shoot the doe. Mm-hmm. Don't even think about it. And that was like, that was law for a long time. Like, there were.
Now, so what you're talking about is in southeastern Oklahoma, mm-hmm. the herd health down there is to a point where it's still mandatory that you can only kill antlerless deer on the weekends in certain counties in Southeast Oklahoma. But you look at the rest of Oklahoma, they're just covered in whitetail, both bucks and does. So you don't have weekend doe days like you do in Southeast Oklahoma, where we grew up and lived. It's just different. Southeast Oklahoma folk start shooting deer in June and July, so it's a year-round thing down there.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
No, we know.
Well, so that you bring up an interesting point with the management, and kind of I'll preface this to, like, I'm very neutral in this discussion, and I think that I don't have a strong opinion either way, because I believe I've got some thoughts on the consumption of younger animals, and I've got some thoughts on the consumption of older animals. And I think it does, Emily, you're onto something in my thoughts about a management perspective. And I think it comes twofold. As you look at sort of throughout history, as we look at how hunting has evolved, you know, going from like subsistence hunting to where people were like, all right, there's a target of opportunity. I'm hungry. I'm going to shoot.
Absolutely.
We see populations decline because of overhunting and poaching and market hunting, to the rise of organizations like Boone and Crockett and sort of that quasi like trophy hunting, generations, not to lump Boone and Crockett in with the trophy hunting, because I think Boone and Crockett in its very foundation was also about management, and people were trying to figure out, how do we tell herd health? How do we tell, you know, how do we start keeping up-to-date records of what management practices are working? And if you go to Boone and Crockett's website, it's kind of like they spell that out as like their intentions. I don't know them well enough to say if that's true or not nowadays or whatever. I'll just take it as I read it. I'll trust them. But I think that all that, and then now you have like organizations like, QDMA. I think they changed their name. Quality Deer Association. Management. Yeah. So like you have that where you're looking at like, all right, quality deer management plan versus trophy management versus traditional management. Like, Where do we as a community sit with those? And I think that differs. Public land hunters, private land hunters, government, states, like, and biologists.
And I also completely understand. So what I was saying earlier about, like, you know, hunters in the grow will take a doe. I don't want people to think that I'm not for, you know, you take your kids out, or a first time hunter, or somebody that's never shot anything before, and the first thing that walks out, they want to shoot it, as long as it's legal, let it happen. I'm not opposed to that at all. You know, so when it comes to herd management, yeah, that is going to come later on down the line, once you've hunted for a few years and you start delving into it more. And then just because it's legal doesn't make it ethical in your mind. And each person can have their own ethics when it comes to taking of whitetail or elk or, you know, whatever you're hunting, you know. So I think that you need to allow yourself some time to get through that, aka killing stage, into your management, into like, okay, well, now I've killed my first buck, I've killed my first doe, now let's look into it a little bit more. I want to get into the cooking side of it. So like you said, like this whole podcast is about, all right, what is going to be good to eat? All right, what is legal that I can take? What is going to be good to eat? Plus, on top of looking at herd health and management of the deer, and then you're talking to people like, you know, you and Lance about, like, okay, I killed this 5-year-old doe, and is she going to be really tough? What do I do with it?
Well, you know, I think also living in Colorado as long as I have, and cutting my teeth on Western hunting out here, there is an aspect of it that is kind of I change from year to year. I've gone 5 years without drawing a deer tag. You know, I mean, it's nuts. It's crazy that the amount of time you put into trying to get tags, and then spot and stalk on public land.
That's a completely different
land.
Ball game when it comes to public versus private. Unfortunately, it puts you. That we haven't even.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you wait 5 years to get a tag, and then the pretty much, you know. And I'm packing that stuff out. So no, I would much rather shoot a year and a half year old than a 3 year old if I'm bringing it out of my back. If I'm being honest, unless it's just super
does that come
huge,
back to the management of the Colorado Fish and Game Department though of their whitetail?
I think if you take a very like wide kind of hug at it, that it does, because that drawing tags, the even things like antler restrictions or the availability of, you know, like Colorado pushed out the new X tags, which you can hunt any season for certain mule deer areas and whitetail areas, because like they want the population more managed and more controlled in those areas. So they've created these, like, basically any weapon, any method of choice for harvest. So that opens up opportunities, both for the hunter, but also to manage the herd, versus like, all right, you got a 1 week gun season to fill it. So I think yes, but I'm sorry, I stepped on you, Lance. So
no, but yeah, so I don't know. In those situations, if three animals walk out and you have a small, a medium, and a large, if it's a cow or a doe, I'm going to go for medium. I'm going to assess the situation, see if this one has a fawn or a yearling with it, and this one doesn't, you know, and try my best to make an ethical choice that way. I have been told by a few old timers, never shoot the herd cow. Basically, your herd cow is what dictates where the herd goes. So you shoot the herd cow and there's all this disruption while a new herd cow steps up and becomes the herd cow. So that meadow you saw elk in every year, you shoot the herd cow. There's a good chance they aren't there next.
Well, I mean, that comes back to herd management.
The new herd cow doesn't like that meadow.
And then, you know, you can say that with turkeys. Oklahoma just changed their spring turkey season and pushed it back 2 weeks and took it from 3 toms in the spring to only 1 tom in the spring. And after reading and talking to some of the guys, one of the reasons they did that is when they start breeding at the beginning of the season, if you kill that alpha tom for that group of turkeys, that all those hens will not breed at all, because that was their alpha tom and now he's gone and they have to regroup, figure out who's going to be the new alpha. So that entire spring they're not even breeding. So they pushed it back 2 weeks to allow breeding to occur before you're allowed to go out and hunt, to hopefully have those hens bred so they can go, you know, lay eggs, have more poults, et cetera, et cetera. And after reading that, it made a whole lot of sense. And so it kind of comes back to what you're saying, Lance, about taking the old cow and completely disrupting the whole herd.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's myself and the ethics in which I choose to follow. There, I have hunted with a lot of people that their ethics end at.
I think personal ethics are really important when it comes to hunting, you know? Especially the longer you're into it.
Yeah. No, at this stage of my life, I have let more stuff walk than I've even pulled up on. You know, it's, but you know, that's me, and that's where I choose to sit, and where somebody else chooses to sit on that, it's not my issue. In regards to our conversation and meat and quality of meat and ethics of shooting younger versus older, I really lean towards your, so much of that is situational as well. If you are a Southern or an Eastern stand hunter and you have an incredibly long season and an opportunity to get 2 does and a buck from the end of August through the middle of December, then that's a whole different animal. You have time to be choosy and you have time to allow that right animal to come your way. Well, like you had mentioned, your Wyoming tag. I'm not sure what Wyoming tag that is, but it, you don't have that opportunity in Colorado. You got a 10-day season or a 5-day season, and that's it. Unless you archery hunt, you know, then you can over the counter another animal and get a month long archery season. So again, I really think so much of that is situational to where you are, and maybe to in areas such as Colorado, maybe the move is to get a better, stronger herd is to actually lengthen seasons.
Well, I've seen this in Oklahoma. We used to have a 9-day deer rifle season. It was panic mode. And it was just, it was chaos. And everybody was shooting everything that they saw at first. There was a lot of extra poaching going on, et cetera, et cetera. And then we extended it to a 16-day season. So it gave everybody a little bit longer to, like, you know, hey, I have this one deer on camera. I've got 16 days, you know, for rifle season, you know, to bag this deer. And we don't see near the panic that we did before with the 9-day. And then, like, if you go to Texas, they have a month-long rifle season. And even then, you don't see near the panic because you have such a long season. So I understand the short season. I understand why these Western states and other states do what they do. But I'm not opposed, and I know I'm going to get a lot of kickback from people in my line of work for saying that, but I'm not opposed to a month-long rifle season, you know. And, you know, October 1st to January 15th in Oklahoma is deer season, and if you hunted every single opportunity that you could kill 8 deer in Oklahoma and 2 maybe antlered. So that's a lot of deer. That's a lot.
It's a whole lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of deer. It's a lot of opportunity.
Everybody's moving to Oklahoma.
Well, I'm just, we're going to take that out.
You're like, wait. not as easy as it sounds, right, Emily?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, I haven't killed anything here in like 2 years. But I've also been very choosy, and ethics comes into play, et cetera, because I haven't had any big antlered, and all we eat is wild game, and we've had so many, we've been grateful enough in to have all these other opportunities to hunt in these other places, so our freezers are full, so there's no point in me going and taking a doe right now because we don't need the meat. So I'm actually horn hunting for almost the first time in probably my hunting career because our freezers are full. So I have been extremely picky, and then we've had some cull deer come in, some cull bucks that are older deer that, you know, they're not going to get any bigger than they are at this point, that need to be taken out of the herd for quality herd management for bigger, you know, better quality antlers. And they just, it hasn't presented itself, you know, in the few times that it had, I didn't have ethical shots or didn't feel comfortable taking the shot, or they, like I said, know when I'm there, know when I'm not.
It's fair. I'm on the other side of the spectrum. So I have an antelope sitting in the freezer, and I am holding nothing but doe tags. So I'm, well, no, I take that back. I have one antler tag, but I don't expect to fill it unless it's a surprise. But yeah, all my other tags are doe or cow. So, but yeah, to me, those are, I guess they're not cheaper tags. For Wyoming, it's the cheaper of the tag because I'm out of state. But Colorado, it's the same price, so it doesn't really matter. But I think they were easier to get. But that's kind of in it too. And I think hitting on this, the whole like subsistence hunting and game management, and kind of like the intersection of those, because a lot of people, I feel, will also be like, oh, I'm a meat hunter, I only take does. But it's like, if you had the opportunity to take a buck or an older deer, like, I would say if you're bringing the meat hunter argument to it, then you wouldn't pass on it.
Absolutely not. And I'm going to eat it, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, also, especially with a lot of the herd health issues out there, I mean, you are better off shooting or taking animals and thinning that herd out as well. You know, So with that said, you know, you could argue, well, then you want to take the older doe to get newer genetics into their gene pool, which maybe might make them a little less susceptible to chronic wasting disease or EHD or whatever. But I mean, with that said, I am not a deer biologist, so I'm not even going to pretend that I know what's best in that aspect. But I do know in the very beginning stages, when you first started hearing about these things, part of what you were hearing were aspects of the herds were, it's large herds that get compacted in the small areas, and then you start seeing these issues arise.
And you're not wrong with that, and that's why there's many states, especially out east, that don't allow baiting because of that reason, mm-hmm. because CWD lives in the ground. And so you congregate a herd into a corn pile or a mineral block or something like that, and one of them has chronic wasting disease, etc. Now you're just spreading it.
Or COVID.
Yes. They do have COVID.
COVID and deer. It's another topic, folks. But another conversation. Jeez, I'll toss this out there as a hand grenade. No. But Wisconsin Fish and Wildlife, or whatever their agency name is, put out a recommendation that people wear masks while gutting deer.
There's actually an Oklahoma State University professor that recommended the same thing.
Huh. Okay.
But there's been no documented cases of COVID transferring to humans as of this point from deer. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
But you can get your deer COVID tested.
Do they use the saliva rapids tests?
They do a saliva test. Don't know. Rapid. No. I don't think it's rapid. They have to send it off, but they do a cheek swab as far as I understand.
Oh, man. I've always gotten the one where they poke you in the brain.
Maybe it's because you're alive.
Probably. I'll take that in trade. All right.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
I guess overall, kind of what I, as we were formulating this conversation in our chat, is looking at from a culinary standpoint. We've talked a lot about hunting and ethics, and I think we've kind of all settled on, like, hunt what makes you happy as long as it's legal and within your personal ethics, right?
Yeah.
To me, that seems where we landed.
So
collectively, okay. So now,
Justin and Lance, what makes a deer or any other game gamey?
Oh, don't say that word. Get out of here.
It has more to do with.
I do have an opinion.
To answer that, I really think it has more to do with what they eat. You know, I've shot some decent animals up in timber that had some age on them, and they were tender and delicious and not gamey at all. And I've shot a couple of young does that were standing in the middle of sage, and you could not get the sage out of them in any way, shape, or form. You know, That also clean lights out shot. I do find that your animals do tend to be a little more tender and not as tough, and have a little more appealing taste. I've had some animals that I shot and ran a few hundred yards, and you know, inevitably, you know, you get a hold of one of those packs in the freezer when you open it up, and you can smell it as it thaws. I mean, it is strange that adrenaline really does affect the taste of the meat.
Can you pull the adrenaline out using a salt bath or an ice bath?
Sure. I mean, you could put enough ketchup on anything to make it delicious, right? You know.
Yeah, but can we put to bed that you don't need to go and drain the blood out of your meat with a salt bath or a water bath necessarily?
You know, I'm a big fan of if you don't let your meat soak in a cooler for 3 days, you know, that's a good start into having quality tasting meat. If possible, hang it, let it get a little age on it, but that's a whole thing. Not everybody's got a walk-in at their house that they can hang it in for 3 days. So, I think you clean it out, look for glands in the meat. In your hindquarter, there's a huge gland that's right there where mm-hmm. your top round, your bottom round, and your sirloin come into play. Get those glands out of there.
That's what maybe you guys need to do a class on, because I don't think very many people who self-process understand those glands that are in there, cutting into it and then making the meat worse than it is by accidentally cutting into it and using the same knife to go ahead and process the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, so like those glands, that's all part of like where they exude their pheromone essence and.
But people don't know what they don't know.
All of that sort of stuff. Get that stuff out of there.
No, I agree with you on that. I think, that might be worth. That's a good piece for an article, definitely.
Yeah, because there's also one of the best cuts of meat on a deer, in my opinion, is the neck roast. Well, there's like four glands in there you got to find to get out, or else you're going to end up with a real musky. Real musky product.
My thoughts on sort of the whole thing is, I think age, diet, and I'll include like nutritional availability and water availability.
That's a major thing.
Yep. Huge. So I think those to me are going to affect flavor probably the most. And I think diet being at the top.
What about handling of the meat after harvest?
Field care is huge. Mm-hmm. I think field care and processing play into a lot. And I think there's a lot of instances that people are ending up with gamey meat or meat that they're not a fan of. It starts at the field care level and kind of goes from there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You need to get off all that silver skin and even that really thin, almost mucousy membrane that's in between the muscle fibers.
Mm-hmm.
As much of that as you can get out as possible. And that's where even if you aren't able to dry age your meat when you get it, give it a nice coating of salt. Just put it in the fridge uncovered for at least 6 hours, and you'll get an element of dry aging with that, which will make removing all of that outer fascia material a lot easier.
I can say, like, I'm a fan of the aging process, and we've spent a lot of time talking about it. I've even been looking at dry agers and things like that, which, you know, if you have an old fridge that has one of the circulating fans in it, not one of the newer fridges, like if you bought a old fridge off Craigslist and just put it in your garage, more likely or not you could use that to dry age, because it's got a fan to constantly, like, circulate air. And if you're able to regulate the temperature, circulate the air, and sort of, you know, eliminate introduction of bacteria and have a collection method for drip and stuff. Like, you can dry age, you know, quarters or whole deer, you know, whatever you're able to do. Steaks at that point, fish. But I would say I'm not as much a fan of the ice soaking method. I think it breaks down the meat and introduces a lot of things in there that you don't want.
And that's how I used to do it. And that's why I brought it up, is because that was the way you did it. You put it in a freaking iced water bath and added salt to it to pull all the blood out of it to make it less gamey. And then as the older I got and the more I talked to people that actually knew what the crap they were talking about, it was like, oh, I've been messing up. Like, I've been doing this all wrong this entire time.
So, I mean, there is an element of truth to that logic. I mean, salt's a desiccant, right? It's going to break down those muscles. But with that said, water and, like, you never hear of a brined beef steak, right? You always hear of brined pork, brined poultry. In essence, you're brining your deer by doing ice and salt.
Yep.
And I can see where it pulls out the blood, because that's exactly what a brine does.
1,000%. It turns it from that dark red color into a, like, a pork colored, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, but yeah, I've heard of everything being brined except red meat.
Which a deer is red meat. So I think that I mean a disservice. Yeah.
I mean, I've done dry brines on red meat, and I have brined deer meat and game meat before red meat.
Yeah, but what I mean is, it's like the entire deer from processing to cooking, not just like, hey, I have this, you know, top brand that I want to do this certain specific thing with. I'm going to do a salt brine with it. Yeah, completely different. No, I'm talking about, like, you harvested the deer and you throw it in some salt water.
Yeah, no, I think, and that goes back to that field care method, that keeping it dry, keeping it cool, cooling it down as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
But I think the dryness factor is probably there. That's what you're searching for. And I think beyond even just texture and flavor is, when you have water and stuff like that, you're able to introduce bacteria and stuff into the meat, which is not necessarily where you want to be.
Yeah, we've decided that when we bring animals from other states that we're coming in, if we have the opportunity, we're going to use dry ice versus regular ice now. So it cools it down, and you don't have any of the water coming off the ice as it melts. And cools it off, good field care, not ruining the meat.
And also, that dry ice will kind of help promote dryness within the meat as well. So it will help it even from kind of not so much waterlogged, but just like bloodlogged in the bottom of the cooler. It'll also kind of help coagulate that and hopefully not open your cooler to a crime scene.
Me if I'm wrong on this. We've also been told and taught that, say, let's just take a backstrap, for instance. You leave the silver skin on when you freeze it to help keep from freezer burn, and then when you thaw it out, then you take the silver skin off. Yay or nay?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
I just I cut it off in the moment, because I portion everything out generally. But
Yeah, I mean, if you know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
So typically I take the backstrap and I fold it in thirds and make two cuts, gives me three backstraps. I'm only cooking for two as well. Mm-hmm. So one third of a small deer backstrap is a great meal. You know, for,
well, now
for
I feel
two.
Like a fatty, because I keep it whole and I cook the entire thing for two people.
That's because you and Ryan won't stop doing push-ups and stuff. You need to keep eating.
What was I thinking? I think that is a great tip for that. Like, if you're going to be doing freeze, and then we could get down this whole conversation of, like, freezing methods. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to go there on this, because I think let's circle around. I wanted to hit one point with, and I think this is kind of the blending of, we'll say, animal husbandry and hunting and the consumption of meat. is that when you look at younger animals that are consumed, be it suckling pig, be it lamb, be it veal, right? What do people look for when they're eating those?
Tenderness, flavor.
Yeah, you're looking for something tender. Veal definitely, more so than any other animal, the characteristics between veal and beef, I find to be a way bigger jump than, say, suckling pig to commodity pork.
Yep, I would say, I think texture, you guys are right on, for sure. Tenderness and texture, I'll lump into one. I think what has evolved to us as palatability. So being a neutral flavor. The animal hasn't had enough time through its diet, through age, to develop a flavor of beef, a flavor of, you know, pork, a flavor of
mutton. So I've never had veal. So does it not have the flavor of beef?
It's super, super neutral.
Then why do people eat
it? It almost tastes milky.
Yep. Tender.
Just because you can cut it with a fork? I made backstrap you can cut with a fork.
All right. So now let's go into this. So now, whoosh, mind blown. I'm going to loop it around. Is now on the other side of the spectrum is that as we hunt for older animals with antlers and older doe or what be it. So now we're on the opposite side. So now we're looking at an animal that's had age, that has had time to develop its diet. So it's consistently eating the same thing over and over. That has then contributed to the flavor of the meat. So now you've got something that's very strong on the other side of like a fawn or a yearling or, you know, a 2-year-old deer versus a 4-year-old deer. Like those flavor points are kind of what I wanted to look at of like, you hear a difference from both sides of the spectrum is that, oh, I like to hunt, but some of the game meat is too much for me because I hunt older animals. But I don't want to hunt under younger animals, but younger animals turn out to be more, quote-unquote, more palatable because they haven't really developed their true
flavor.
Well,
here's something that blew my mind that I just learned recently within the last 5 years or so is that the shanks are the most flavorful part of an animal. It's closer to the ground. It's a harder working muscle, so it has more flavor. And I have never heard that and had never kept the shanks until talking to y'all. Talking to chefs, because that's not something in the normal hunting world that people are taught, like normal biology, et cetera, et cetera. That's not something that I ever knew. It's like, take that piece of crap that has all the sinew and tendons in it and throw it out because it's crap. Wrong.
I'll be honest with you. Shanks are now one of my favorite.
Mind blown. I had no idea.
But I would not have said that prior to things like the Instapot.
Hmm. Well, pressure cookers.
Because, yeah.
Come on,
well,
Grandma.
Who has a pressure cooker?
This old lady right here.
I mean,
I do ranch food.
Yeah, I got one.
Actually,
come on, chef.
I eventually would have got a pressure cooker. I'm typically not a fan of new kitschy things.
Pressure cooker is not a new kitschy thing. Literally, our grandparents and great grandparents.
He's talking about an Instapot.
I know, but I mean a pressure cooker.
I'm talking Instapot. When I was teaching culinary classes, I would always get asked about an Instapot. I'm like, what the heck's an Instapot? And I got asked about it so much, I went and bought one to play with it. And I brought the thing home, and I'm like, oh my God, this is genius. This is amazing. It has changed the way that I cook those sorts of things. And an Instapot makes it to where, if you have an Instapot and you make cereal and that's about as far as your culinary experience goes, I can tell you how to make shanks in an Instapot. That'll be mind-blowingly delicious. You know, it's so simple. You can teach anybody how to enjoy those cuts, which, again, makes me a big proponent for things like shanks and some of these lesser cuts now.
I enjoy shanks a lot. I will keep shanks. I will ask people who are going to tell me they're going to grind shanks. To keep their shanks whole.
Yeah, like,
you just
that's what
do
we were
it.
Taught. That's how we. That's what we knew to do with shanks. Is you grind them or you throw them away.
Yep. No, I think there's so much, and I think people are learning to appreciate it more. It's becoming like a flashy thing, which is good because it should be.
Like
Like
what?
Yeah, also a great thing. I was just talking about that day. I think I was talking with someone at work, and I was like, they're like, what are you going to do this weekend? I was like, I may go deer hunting. And they're like, oh, yeah, looking to get another deer. I was like, yeah. They're like, oh, are you going to, you know, feed the heart to your kids? And I was like, no way, I'm going to save it for later. I was like, and I need a liver, and I probably need a couple more kidneys because I only have one set of kidneys, and I need some more so I can make a kidney pie. And they're like – they were a bit intimidated. But no, it's
you guys, did you guys post a picture of tongues earlier today on your Insta story?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another one that you can keep. I don't
know. Yeah, I like tongues.
But just something else weird that you keep that you can eat.
I mean, conceivably, you can keep about. I mean, I'm talking just of things to eat on a deer. You can keep easily 90% of it. I mean, they're obviously somewhere out there, somebody's figured out how to do something with lungs. I'm not going to dive in on that. But if you were so inclined, you could make your own venison sausage casings. Not something I'm going to tackle, but there's somebody out there that can do that. You know, I mean, yeah, if you really went in, you could probably clean the stomach out. And actually, I think there's one, it's like a German sausage that's actually cased in.
I can't think of it, but I think of haggis. Haggis is in the stomach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a sheep's stomach, which would be similar in size.
So, I mean, if you really wanted to dive into it, you could. I mean, for me, I do like to keep large round bones, make various stocks with it. That's just because homemade stock tastes so much better than anything you can buy anywhere.
I agree with that.
You know, but yeah, the tongues are delicious. The only problem is you just need so many of them.
You end up with a freezer full of tongues.
Yeah, it takes like 10 years to get enough tongues to be like, hey, I've got this great tongue dish for all of us.
It's something I've never delved into.
We've got over on the website, we've got a great, it's a deer tongue sushi recipe. It's not raw, but nice. it is a tongue sushi recipe written by one of our former field staff writers. So that's an interesting one. There's another tongue recipe on there too. I think I still have two or three tongues in the freezer from last year.
So is there a conclusion to this? I know that we've really kind of talked in circles, and I don't know that we've agreed on or disagreed on anything at this point.
So we agreed that on the hunting of it, of kind of like ethically, legally, hunt whatever makes you happy. Like that part. Consumption-wise.
Have the two chefs decided?
My stance is it goes back to hunting whatever. It just understand the difference between the two types of meat.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. If you shot a young doe, there are definitely things that you can cut a steak with that you can't cut a steak with on an old doe. You know, definitely, part Like, you could, on a young doe, you could definitely do some stakes with your eye around that on an old doe would, they would look beautiful, but mm-hmm. they would chew yeah. like bubble gum.
I think with younger animals, while you're still going to have leanness to it, you're going to be afforded the tenderness that you won't find in older animals because of that age factor. You're also, if you're someone who maybe doesn't enjoy the full-fledged flavor of game that you would find in an older animal, maybe you should start harvesting younger animals.
Or, you know, you harvest a young one, you do normal steak cuts, and you harvest an older one, and that's the one that you do jerky and summer sausage in.
Low and slow. Mm-hmm. Low and slow cooking, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, low and slow. You do your roasts and your stews, et cetera, with the older ones. Or, you know, take it to a processor and grind it all. Mix it with pork fat, you know? Older, younger, you're not going to be able to tell the difference because it's mixed with pork fat.
Lance, you had a comment. Sorry.
So where I stand on this is I'm on the mindset is, yes, I may have to alter my course a little bit, but I could do mm-hmm. something with anything I got. I have that part covered. For me, it's again, it comes down to the ethical shot. Now, I mean, if there is, unless you really are talking about once-in-a-lifetime buck or bull that walks out, then, you know, that might change your logic. But, again, if you're talking antlerless or non-trophy game, I'm leaning towards which one gives me the shot that mm-hmm. I feel most comfortable taking.
That's fair.
As my primary driving force on which animal I'm going to take. And if I'm on a 5-day hunt in Oklahoma and I'm seeing 10 deer a day. You can
only
shoot 8.
Only 2 antlered.
Exactly. But,
you can't shoot them all at once.
Yes. I'm more inclined to different means.
But in that situation, though, I am more inclined to be a little more mm-hmm. selective.
Absolutely. You non-resident versus resident, 1,000%.
Well, that and just opportunity. I mean, out here in Colorado, I know that if I have a tag in my pocket and there is a legal animal that is presented a shot that I am comfortable with, and I choose not today, maybe tomorrow, within 20 minutes, I will see mm-hmm. it cross a ridge and I will hear a boom, and there it goes. So it does leave me in a position where if it's something that I would take on the last day, I better be willing to take it on the first day too.
I mean, you make a good point. I mean, state to state is going to be different for your opportunities and advantages of taking what you want versus what you need versus what's available at that point. So our availability here for meat-wise is unlimited. Now, that 200 Boone and Crockett inch whitetail, yeah, not so much. But, you know, I go out and I need meat, I'm going to be able to get meat. I want to go out and kill a big one. Yeah, I'm going to have to work for it. But, you know, it's not going to be the same in every single state. But if I'm a non-resident going to another state and the opportunity arises for me to kill something after I spent all this money as a non-resident, you bet you I'm going to be first thing I see that's legal and ethical to shoot.
That's why
I'm probably going to take
it. In a lot of places, as a non-resident hunter, I get really attracted to doe tags and cow tags. Just the price availability point. And I won't say like pound. I'm not going to put a like dollar amount on a pound of meat because we all know it goes way. There's so much more complication into that.
If that's the case, dove meat is probably the most expensive.
I killed 5 this year. I'm not telling you how many I saw and shot it.
I mean, if you take, and I wrote an article on this a long, long time ago, and it's still like one of our very popular articles. And if you take like pound for pound, and like you take the price of a hunting license and you compare with the price of, you know, meat in the store, like, yeah, there's a big difference where you lean towards game, but that's once you've acquired all the things. That's once you realize, like, oh yeah, this is, I'm not spending money to go out and do something I enjoy on top of everything else. Like, there's a lot of complicated things that go into it. But if it comes down to it, if I'm like, look, I want to go out and I want to hunt because I enjoy hunting and I want to hunt because I enjoy eating game meat, then statistically speaking, the probability of harvesting an antlerless animal is higher than harvesting an antlered animal. And usually the tag availability is much
also
higher.
Also because the ratio is skewed and it's not 50-50 like it should be.
Boom, you brought it all the way back around.
Well, you know, I think there's also so much the whole purpose of this debate really stems from what's perceived as socially acceptable, right? I mean, no. I know you guys don't play golf, but if you watch the PGA Tour on one weekend and you go out the next weekend to play golf, you have this misconception that you should be doing, you should be on the green in two shots on a par five, and you should be sinking 50-foot putts, or you should just be able to get on the green within like 3 feet of the hole. When you look at the hunting industry as a whole, there are guys that have a whole career of shows based off of taking once-in-a-lifetime deer, and they do it week after week after week. Mm-hmm. You pull up any hunting bag, you know, there's magazines upon magazines with these deer of a lifetime. And you got one guy that's in the whole magazine with like 12 of them. It establishes this weird, unrealistic.
If you in a lifetime kill a Boone and Crockett deer, I mean, that's it. I mean, like you said, that's not normal to go out every weekend and kill a Boone and Crockett deer.
I mean, I've never heard anybody that duck blind go, shy. That duck looks too
true.
Young.
That's true.
You know,
if it flies and dies,
we'll let him wait till next year.
Yeah, exactly. You're just grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah. No, I think these are all very. I think that's kind of like where we settled, and definitely I agree with you, Lance, on that. Sort of what stems from the debate is like what's socially acceptable, and at the end of the day, I think it all should be. As long as you're following the law and you have some ethical standard, maybe that's the social standpoint that we should be focusing on, is the ethics versus...
No, sorry. Unfortunately, I see a lot of hate on social media of like these, and I'm going to say men, and I don't necessarily mean men, but I see it more often than I do women, of posting photos of these yearling deer, or these 2.5-year-old deer that aren't anything spectacular, and they are super proud, and they're getting a ton of hate, and it aggravates me to no end. Like, this could be their only opportunity. This might be the only one day out of the year they get to go hunt. This is the only thing that stepped out, or this is the very first thing they've ever seen, or this is the first time they've ever hunted, and they've killed something, and they're proud of it because they did the work, they did it legally, they did it ethically, and everybody is giving them crap for it online, and it's just the keyboard warriors. I can't. I don't have anything nice to say right now without cussing. And it just...
No. I totally agree with you.
Everybody's Superman and anonymity.
Yeah, no, right? I'm a fan, and I think if an individual wants to celebrate a success, it's their success to celebrate in the way that they see fit. You know, like
I personally, and this may get me in trouble, but I have much more respect for that guy that went out that had 2 days to do it and found some plot of state land that had just this
Yep.
One young deer with a death wish walk through than some of these guys that have done some of these other types of hunts that not only is there a certain amount of pay for success, there's also a certain
amount of trophy ability within that success as well.
Well, yeah, well, and then we start talking about economics, and then like, what's the economic ability? Like, I mean, I can't go out and afford a, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 hunt.
But some people can.
Yeah, and I'm go for it.
And absolutely, and that's another thing too. You got the money, great, spend it, but don't dog on people that don't have it. Everybody should be celebrated in their own right as long as it's legal and ethical.
And you cook it and enjoy
absolutely.
It.
Or donate it to, you know, Hunters Against Hunger or something along those lines.
Absolutely. If it's not something you're willing to eat, believe me, somebody out there would love to have it.
Right. I don't like waterfowl. If I ever killed waterfowl, I would 1,000% give it away.
You know my
dress. I don't like to kill something I'm not going to eat.
Send it this way. Oh, yeah.
We actually still have some game bags in here.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that now. All good. what was I going to say? Oh, so we're kind of closing on time. So this is, I think we've settled pretty much in the same regard. Yeah. I don't know.
I think it was a good talk.
Yeah. Hold on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hold that thought. I think it was a great thought. But I'm going to give this is the time for our last thoughts, our alibis, the hang fire. So since Lance is our guest today, I want to give you the opportunity. Any thought you have, you want to share with us? Any question? Anything you want to share with the listeners out there? This is the moment.
I think just in general, if you're listening and you're looking to get into hunting, and this is an avenue you're curious about, or maybe you're not curious about it, but somehow or another you hit the wrong thing while downloading this, and we're like, I ended up on some random hunting show. Hopefully, we have taken some of the intimidation out, and made this sport that we love, hate, cuss, and everything else somewhat more approachable.
Nice. All right, Emily, what you got?
I really want people to stop hating on people that kill something that they don't think they would have. As long as it's legal, ethical, morally right, let them have their time. Don't hate on them. But in the same breath, if you've been doing this for several years, I urge you to think about herd health and management and the bigger picture. And maybe going years without necessarily taking anything what you consider substantial for the bigger picture of the herd health, of the herd management for whatever state you're in. And then other than that, have fun, be safe, be ethical, don't poach.
I agree with that. I think at the end, kind of where I'm settled at is I really find myself the same place I've always settled at is that at the end of the day, hunt what makes you happy, hunt in a legal and ethical way, and enjoy your harvest, enjoy the meat, and find a way to respect it through these culinary adventures that we all have of knowing and understanding the difference between game and other types of meat and learning how to properly process it and take care of it. And I think it's an important step for all hunters. And anglers. Mm-hmm. Take care of your fish too. Don't leave those guys out.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the fishes.
Well, oh gosh. That's another show. but no, I think at the end of the day, like I'm still in the same spot, so I'm gonna continue to live on and enjoy posting pictures of my doe and my young deer and the old deer and hopefully the cow elk that I'm going to shoot at some point in the near future. You know, and whatever, and I'll celebrate that in the kitchen with friends and family, and we'll all have a great time. So, I encourage everybody to do the same, and don't let social media get you down. It's a bad judgment place.
Just don't read the comments. Just don't read the comments.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sometimes. It's hard to avoid that when you're like, oh yeah, check this out, like. I don't know. At the end of the day, maybe you're just better off not posting it in certain places where you know it's going to happen.
Just don't read the comments.
Or just don't read the comments. All right, guys. Well, I thank everybody for listening tonight. And as always, show notes are available online. You can scroll down whatever podcast platform you're on. They're there. You get the links to some of the things that we've talked about, any recipes we mentioned tonight. And then make sure to head over to social media, Tagged Out Kitchen. That's where Lance lives at on the social world. Harvesting Nature, make sure you're on following us as well. Get all the great, awesome things that's going on there. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button. Leave us a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.